This is 9/11 Free Fall.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another episode of 9/11 Free Fall. My name is Andy Steele, and I am the host. Tonight, we'll be joined by Bob McElvain. We'll be talking about the current situation with Iran and relating it back to 9/11 Truth. He's got a lot to say about it, since he is a peace activist after all. That's coming your way in just a moment.
He's in the lobby, and the third explosion, the whole lobby collapsed on us.
Was that a secondary explosion?
Yes, it was.
Floor by floor, it started popping out.
It was like, if they had detonated.
Yeah,
planned to take down a building. Boom, 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 boom.
We have explosive demolition at not only the Twin Towers, but also Building 7.
For the third time today, it's reminiscent of those pictures we've all seen too much on television before when a building was deliberately destroyed by well-placed dynamite to knock it down.
You want to call your mother or something?
It's just a matter of time. That's all it is. It's a matter of time and the persistence of those who continue to adhere to it and push for it. And that's what we're doing.
Tune in to 9/11 Free Fall, a show about 9/11 truth, 9/11 science, and the activists and scholars who are blowing the lid off the crime of the century. You can download episodes at 911freefall.com.
The views expressed on this show by guests and the host on issues outside of the 9/11 controlled demolition evidence are the opinions of those individuals alone and do not necessarily reflect those of architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth.
I'm joined again today by Bob McElvain, who has been a tireless crusader for a new 9/11 investigation for many years. Our draft legislation, the Bobby McElvain Act, is named after his son, who died at the age of 26 from an explosion in the North Tower lobby on the morning of September 11th. Bob's also a peace activist, which we'll be drawing from his experience as one for today's show, because there's a lot going on in the world. And been following it all weekend, maybe a little bit of good news a few hours before this recording, but it's a situation that keeps on coming up, and it's one that we need to address here on this show because, as we all remember, a lot of this started because of the September 11th attacks. I mean, it's been going on for many decades, but it really went into hyperdrive after that happened, and we've all seen that famous video of Wesley Clark, the guy who ran for president. He was a general talking about a plan he had seen to invade several countries, Iran being one of them, and I just see this as a continuation of that. So this is all related to 9/11, and Bob's got a lot to say, I imagine, on this topic as a peace activist. So Bob, thank you first for coming on the show today.
Oh, thank you very much for having me, Andy.
Now, we've talked about your day of September 11th a lot on the show. We've talked about your calling for a new investigation and the problems you have with the official story. I'm going to ask you a very unique kind of question because, obviously, you joined Peaceful Tomorrows, which we'll talk about more on this show later. And this was a group of 9/11 family members that didn't want to go invade the entire world in the aftermath of it. But for the sake of knowing your story better, you're a peaceful person, but in the days after 9/11, was there at any moment when revenge crossed your mind? You know, nobody would fault you because, I mean, I didn't lose anyone, and I was cheering when they showed footage of the Northern Alliance attacking the Taliban that day. This was a battle that had already been planned before 9/11 happened, and I thought it was the U.S. striking back, and I was like, yeah, get him. So nobody would fault you, but I want to know, did that ever cross your mind when you got the news of what had happened to Bobby?
Not 1 second. Never thought of it. I didn't trust it at first, but you have to remember after something like that, you're in shock. And, you know, I don't know what the proper way to deal with shock, but you just dealt with it, you know. And so, I mean, for 6 months, we just didn't know. And you know what happened? So many people were coming by constantly. And, you know, that's the great part of something like that. Not great part, but I mean the fact that people, so many people are concerned. So people were bringing food constantly. We're talking to people. But, you know, I don't know if it's 6 months, maybe 3 months. But then after that, you're just, then you become numb. So you're so numb, you don't think about revenge. And I mean, I would have never thought about revenge at all because I was a history teacher. I read a lot of history. I've always read history. And things aren't that easy. It just, you know, I just knew that. And so, no, not once did I ever think of revenge. And I'm not, you know, I'm not a pacifist. I was part of Peaceful Tomorrows. I don't want war and so forth. But, God, don't forget, I owned a bar in Northeast Philadelphia. And it was a union bar. So, you know, every week I'd see a fight. And sometimes I was involved in fights. I never would try to hurt anyone. But certainly I've been in enough fights that I couldn't call myself a pacifist. So I'm not a tough guy, but I'm not a pacifist.
Yeah, that's what I'm like, too. I mean, I don't believe we'll never, ever need a military. I mean, if somebody's parachuting into my yard, I'm going to fight back to the best of my abilities. I'm not saying I'm going to do very well. But this whole take over the entire world, and we're going to get into some of these keyboard tough guys that I've been seeing over the past weekend, too, are so eager to play with the lives of other people for a moment of sounding macho or cool on the internet. And this culture is promoted in this country. I've seen it since September 11th. Just this, you know, you got country music, cheering war, and these people that go on television and, again, talk about how we need to strike back. But I don't ever see these people behind the desks on TV gearing up to go parachute into Iran or Syria or Iraq themselves. Let's talk about Peaceful Tomorrows. You've mentioned this group here on the show. I've talked a little bit about what it is, but what was this group focused on? And then what kind of work did you do with them?
Well, Peaceful Tomorrows is, you know, started by, well, I won't give the name to, I know David Vittori, he's not a member of it now, but, well, as soon as we decided to go to war with Afghanistan, this group formed. And I found out about the group, and I really turned, well, I really turned sour against the peace movement as far as, well, all right, I'll get to that later. But David Petorti started this Peaceful Tomorrows, and they met, and I don't know if I contacted them or they contacted me, but I just felt war was the most idiotic thing that we could possibly do. I've always been against war. You know, I guess you can say it on peace, you know, pacifist in that sense. So I contacted them, and they were 100% against the Afghanistan war, and that's why I joined the group. And so we went to, you know, went to meetings, you know, because the anti-war movement was really escalating at that time. And in fact, I just remember going to a meeting in New York, and I really had a difficult time there because it was difficult for people to. Everybody wanted to go to war with Afghanistan. We didn't. So, you know, that was our statement. No, going to war, and we're all family members that lost someone on 9/11, and we didn't want to go to war with Afghanistan. And, you know, that, you were just talking to deaf ears at that time. So we you know, that was our message. So we would talk to people, and that was one of my jobs for the next 5-6 years or so. You know, we traveled around the world talking about this. But I really went sour on the peace movement. I don't know exactly. When did the Iraq war start? 2003. Well, that's when I really, really understood what was happening. And I would go to these meetings in New York City, anywhere, representing Peaceful Tomorrows about going to war. And I would go to these meetings, and I forget the woman's name in New York, and it was a big group that wanted, you know, were organizing the march against Iraq, which certainly we wanted to do, and I think you know, we led the march in New York City. You know, it was well over 250,000 people. But I was at these meetings, and I'm saying, we must, although we're going, you know, we want to stop the war in Iraq, but I said, what about Afghanistan? Are we making statements on this? This war is still evil. Yet even the peace movement wanted to jump on the bandwagon about Afghanistan, but not, and you know, saying the same thing you were saying. They really wanted to go after because these were the people that did it. Now, at that time, I didn't have a strong enough argument to say one way or another, you know, who's to blame, who wasn't to blame. But being part of Peaceful Tomorrows, I'm saying, well, this is still a war. We can't be doing it. But anyway, we you know, it continued, but we marched in Washington. We marched in New York City. And we spoke all around the United States about wars. And then it just enveloped us totally. We would go in Korea, you know, South America, Japan. I spoke in both Japan and Colombia about wars and what we're doing. So that's basically all we're doing is Peaceful Tomorrow. We go around the world, and Peaceful Tomorrow is still doing it. Anti-war. There's just no reason for wars. Things have to be settled in a peaceful way. And it comes from a Martin Luther King statement. Wars are poor chisels for carving out peaceful tomorrows. That's where we got our name. And it is. And that's what the insanity, what we're talking about now, that people are still try to go to war, still want to go to war. And to me, it's, you know, as Smedley Butler said in the 40s or 30s, you know, it's a racket. War is a racket. And the money being made already with, you know, Lockheed Martin, all these military manufacturers, they're just making it, you know, tons of money. And if Smedley Butler was sitting here right now, that's what he'd be saying. I told you, this is nothing but a racket. And it's obscene. And, of course, you get all this, you know, bullshit propaganda you hear, and most people are going to say, you know, of course we should go to war. I mean, both the Democrats and the Republicans, you know, they're 100% behind us taking issue with what happened to Soleimani, or Mani, whatever his name is, in Iran. So it's, you know, this is what the CIA does. You know, they control, the papers. They control everything. So they just continually initiate these wars. And Peaceful Tomorrows, I'm sure they'll be the first ones at the next rally. You know, hopefully they will be there. And I'm sure there's, I know there has been some rallies, but hopefully. And what we need is, you know, like a multi-million person rally, you know, in Washington, D.C., specifically in Washington, D.C., where they just take over the town. And that's what has to be done, that these peace groups, Medea, Code Pink, and so forth and so on, they just, we have to mobilize, and certainly my wife and I would be part of it, mobilize millions and millions of people. And that's the only way. We got to just come out and say this isn't going to happen anymore. And it's so indicative of what this country does, what this government does. You know, to me, it's another false flag attack. God, Iraq, all these people should have been hung after Iraq. Everyone knew that these weren't true, but the statements weren't true about Iraq. Yet we still went to war, and God, we're still in Iraq. I mean, it's sickening. So, but people just don't learn their lesson. And of course, if the media is controlled by the government or by the clandestine part of the government, then people aren't going to learn because they don't have the time to look into these things. So that was the job of Peaceful Tomorrows. I finally dropped out of Peaceful Tomorrows because after going to the commission hearings, specifically after Condoleezza Rice, I just lost my mind. I was, you know, afterwards, I was being interviewed, and I was just so upset. I wasn't screaming, but I'm sure I was using curse words and so forth and so on. And I just said, this is ridiculous. And to me, Peaceful Tomorrows, I just couldn't do it anymore. I had to come out and say, these people, the commission is lying. Everybody is lying about my son's murder. So I just had to get more militant about things. And I'm in contact with Peaceful Tomorrows, but I don't do any work for them. Certainly, if there is a big demonstration, my wife and I will certainly go to it. And God, I'd love to speak at something like that. So that's Peaceful Tomorrows is still in action. We haven't done any marches yet, but we thank God Japan was probably the greatest thing I ever did. We went to Japan and pushed a 2,000-pound tombstone honoring all those innocent civilians killed in war. And we pushed that for like over 2 weeks and went to different towns and advocating. We walked with the Hibakusha that were, you know, always constantly talking about the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And the walk was from Nagasaki to Hiroshima. And then, you know, we had ceremonies there. I mean, that was just unbelievable. You know, the people you met from around the world that came to, you know, spend some time on the march. But, you know, nothing has worked. You know, you just keep thinking, when is it, well, this going to stop? It's just, it's absolutely insane. Absolutely insane. And the thought that we might be going to war because, you know, they even bring up Iran for 9/11. It's the most ridiculous thing in the world. I just can't believe it. So it's, so again, going back to peace, you know, if they go, if there is a huge march, I certainly would be part of it, but I do not do any more work for Peaceful Tomorrows, although I believe in everything they do. I just, you know, my focus on how Bobby died and all the stories, so everything we know about 9/11 is false. That's my goal in life. That's my, not my goal in life, but that's my, that's my duty in life now.
Did you ever get any flack for it? Like, I remember Jeremy Gleck, his father was, I believe, a firefighter that died that day, and he went on Bill O'Reilly, and he wasn't towing the company line. When I say the company, I mean the nationalistic line that was being put out at the time, saying we need to go get the terrorists and exact some revenge on the world here. You know, he was saying, why should those Afghanis die over this, who had nothing to do with it? And Bill O'Reilly got so flustered with him that he cut the interview short, cut the kid off, didn't even want to host him anymore, you know, just cut the segment short. And I saw that years later, and I was just so amazed by that, because it's such an admission of defeat to just cut the interview short by the host when the person isn't agreeing with you. I just wonder, did you guys get any of that same kind of treatment, or did they just kind of pretend that you didn't exist?
No, I, you know, as everyone welcomed Peaceful Tomorrows. I did Bill O'Reilly. I did a lot of shows. And, you know, I never had a problem. I, you know, over the phone, I've gotten threats. That's why, you know, I won't answer a phone if I don't know what the, if I don't recognize the phone number. But, you know, lately I haven't got, well, as I say, I just don't answer the phone. I just, so I have had threats, and I've had people, you know, that I've met that just get angry at me, the fact that I do this. So I really don't associate with many people now, because it's, you know, they associate me with 9/11, and some people have strong feelings about it one way or another. You know, the people that have strong feelings about what I'm doing, then they'll talk to me. Others, sometimes they want to lash out at me. And again, you know, when they do lash out, you know, I come close to a fight. You know, I'm not that, again, I'm not that much of a pacifist that I'm going to sit there and take a lot of crap. You know, when we used to go on those marches, you would, you know, they had people come in there, and they just, their job is just to antagonize you. And of course, at that time, you really have to avoid, you know, a physical altercation. But no, I, you know, it's just, I don't know. I just don't associate with anything anymore. Anyway, again, with the Peaceful Tomorrows, we always, the TV was, they loved Peaceful Tomorrows. Like, I will not get an interview anymore because of my strong stance and where I've gone with this. Peaceful Tomorrows, they're looking for peace, okay? And at that time, I mean, I had a good interview with Bill O'Reilly. He wasn't that bad, you know, He tries to bully it, but everything back then. But that's what I was talking about, that we don't have to go to war, things of this sort. It's keeping the line of Peaceful Tomorrow. So it really is very easy. I, you know, I remember Jeremy, you know, with Bill O'Reilly at that time. But I did an interview. I couldn't go to New York, but I did it down here in Philadelphia with Bill O'Reilly. And he was fairly nice, but he just tries to bully you. And, you know, you just got to deal with it. At this time, I certainly wouldn't even think of doing an interview, especially up there, because, you know, it probably would come to fisticuffs, because I just have no tolerance just to discuss it one way back and forth. You know, my idea, what we've done, we've killed a lot of innocent people around the world for nothing. But again, that's why they won't bring me in for an interview. Peaceful Tomorrows, I don't know if they're still getting interviews, but I certainly believe they are, because people still like that idea. Geez, you know, we need peace. So I didn't really have that much problem with TV and, you know, newspapers. Although I have, you know, just to give you an example, Philadelphia Inquirer, though, I remember they had interviews with me. They did a couple of great interviews. And the women, there are two different women, and they were trying to get to my story, what I felt. You know, this is after Peaceful Tomorrow, so forth and so on. And you know, they put it to their editors, and the editors wouldn't put it in. And I think both of them, well, one of them left, and the other one was fired. You know, so I remember one girl from the Daily News, she had called me, and I was saying, well, there's a different story to all this, and they just, they wouldn't allow it in the Daily News, which is a local newspaper in Philadelphia. So the newspaper, that's the biggest problem we have in this country. It's the media. It's just controlled. Either by the CIA, and of course, you know, just a trickle down effect to the owners and the, you know, the editors, they just won't allow a report from me. You know, again, if it was about Peaceful Tomorrows, oh, they'd love to bring in an article or show that in the Inquirer or the Daily News. But, you know, the militancy I showed now towards, you know, what really happened that day, that, you know, just the fact that I said that Muslims had nothing to do with my son's death, well, that cuts off everything. They're not going to print that. They just refuse to print it, so it's frustrating. That's why it was great being with Peaceful Tomorrows, because you could talk. Everybody wanted to talk to you, you know, no matter where I went. You know, they'd say, "Geez, that's a great thought, but big deal. It's not getting to the president. It's not getting to the CIA. It's not getting to the owners of the newspapers."
Now, with the current situation in Iran, I've been sort of following this. Somebody told me that the embassy was under attack, and then I don't know if it was the next day or the following day after that where the general got killed from Iran. And then yesterday, before this recording, Iran struck back, didn't kill anybody, did some damage to some bases. This morning, the president comes out and says there's not going to be any more retaliation, but we don't know if that's actually the end of it. It's never the end of it. And I see people boil it down to simply this week of events. Oh, the embassy came under attack. They think Iran was behind it. And they don't step back and look at the decades of antagonization that the U.S. has participated in. They don't look at the fact that we invaded Iraq, and they can say, hey, that happened before Trump. But I hear all this we talk when they say we need to go to war, we need to strike back. I don't know who they're talking about, because I'm not included in that. I'm not at war with anybody. So when they want to include we, then we have to look at the entire we, not just the current administration, but previous administrations. And this is just a situation that has continued to fester because of a lot of actions that we took after September 11th. There were actions that happened before September 11th as well. But I see this completely unsophisticated view of the world being espoused by TV personalities, by who know better, by the way. I don't think that they're unsophisticated. I think they're propagandists. I mean, I just heard somebody this morning on one of these talk radio programs say something. I think it was Rush Limbaugh, and he said something to the effect of, people can't grasp how simple it is. We are the good guys. It's that simple. I said, yeah, that is very simple. It's very simple-minded. There are no good guys or bad guys in any of these situations. There's just a lot of violence and escalation that I don't think is going to be worked out anytime soon. And it's like people don't understand how history really works. First of all, what's your comment on this completely unsophisticated look at the world? Like, we're the good guys, they're the bad guys. What in our society, from what you've seen, contributes to this and causes people to not just stop for a moment and realize that that's not how the world works?
Well, that's the biggest problem. I mean, no matter where I go, you must know history to understand 9/11. If you don't understand history, you will never understand 9/11. That's basically, it's a false flag. What is a false flag? That's been going on forever. And that's why we go in the wars. You know, go again back to the 30s with Smedley Butler. It's a very thin book. War is a racket. It has always been a racket. You know, there's no such thing as good or evil as far as the people with money in the world. You know, they're always making money off of this. And, I mean, you go into every war, World War I, World War II, all these wars could have been stopped very easily. But, you know, it's a racket. I mean, Iran-Contra is a perfect example. God, here we're talking about, 1980, Barbara Honecker in her book, October Surprise, where Iran had hostages in the 80 election. In the fall, they decided to give Iran, $40 million to postpone releasing the hostages so Reagan could win the election. Now, here's a true enemy back in 1980, Iran, which, you know, right now it's they've always put, but here we gave them $40 million just to postpone the release of the hostages until January. The hostages are released the day Reagan became president of the United States. Well, this is how this world works. This is how this country works. Then you go to Iran-Contra. We can't allow communism in the South and Central America, so we sell arms to Iran, again, an avowed enemy, back, you know, like 86, 85 this time. We sell arms to them so that we can use this money to overthrow the Contras or to overthrow the Sandinistas in Nicaragua. Well, that's why you have to study history. These same people have been around, well, specifically Iran-Contra, these same people were around in 2001. They were working with the Mujahideen. They were working with Osama bin Laden. So the important point of all this is he really, really must understand history. This is how it works. Countries around the world are not going to be independent of what we want, and that is what we call capitalism. And to me, and Venezuela is a perfect example. We're going to constantly try to overthrow Maduro there because he wants to bring prosperity to the people of that country. Well, we say that you can't possibly do that without unfettered capitalism. Well, that's been proven. That's a lie. It's an absolute lie. But we're going to continue to do the same thing. And that's what we've done for, well, at least since World War II. Iran, with Mozambique, he wanted to bring prosperity to his people in 1953 by taking over the oils of Great Britain. And he was going to compensate Great Britain for it. But we couldn't have that. You can't have countries taking over their own natural resources. And it's the same thing now because Iran is independent. They want to do their own thing, and we just can't allow that. That's why we're doing this. Iraq is in the Stone Age. I mean, the poverty in Iraq is just unbelievable. Yet we have troops in there, and we're complaining that they kill someone in that Iraq is being friendly with Iran. So it goes on and on and on. But the thing is, you need to work so hard to find all this information. And my thing is, people don't have the time. I mean, I'm doing it because my son was murdered, and I used to do it because I was a history teacher. But, you know, like my son, he doesn't have the time to do all his reading. He has four kids, and he supports everything I do. Now, you know, around the world, my brother, he doesn't want to talk to me about this. He's not going to spend all this time looking at the evils of our empire. What is an empire? He can't believe that we would call this an empire. So that's our biggest problem. And, of course, is the media. We have to blame the media for everything because they won't cover any of it. They're cowards. They're millionaires doing the bidding for billionaires around the world. And that's in essence, is the problem because they're not, you know, you just can't watch TV. It's all propaganda. It's all, and, of course, then who controls the TV? Of course, the CIA does, the Pentagon. You know, it's absurd, but then people say, oh, I can't believe all that. But the thing is, how are you going to, you know, because I tell them and say, you know, someone on TV, well, they haven't gotten this information. Certainly they would have told us. But the media is the biggest problem. And, of course, they're taking bigger and bigger control of what's being sent out to the American public or to the world. I think the rest of the world is understanding this. I think so, you know, I think this is all, we are making strides. A place like Venezuela, which is, you know, they are independent right now. Although we probably will go to war with them, but I think it's a great sign that Putin's meeting with Assad yesterday. So the China and Russia is joining in these forces that say, hey, this has to change. They're not going to go to war with Iran because Russia doesn't want them to. And that's, to me, somehow, some way, if they all get together, I don't know, you know, but war has to be avoided. I don't know if it will or not, but the fact that the rest of the world is looking at this is ridiculous. The fact that Iraq wants the troops out of there, this is great. So I think we can see positive developments because the rest of the world is looking at the absurdity of all this, and it is absurd. And, you know, the man we have, you know, it's people complain about Trump. I mean, I think he's an idiot. I wouldn't even want to be in his presence. But it's the same stuff, you know, look what Bush did in Iraq. I mean, God, I don't know how many. Do we talk a million people possibly died in Iraq? I don't know. It could be more. Obama is just as bad. He started the idea we can assassinate anyone, including American citizens. So all our presidents have done this. So everybody, and I think the Democrats have lost their soul. You know, the Russiagate, that was the biggest ridiculous thing that ever happened in this country. You know, and people are, suddenly we're looking at Russia as the boogeyman. You know, Russia was the boogeyman in World War One. Russia was a boogeyman immediately 5 seconds after World War II. They've always been. We always need a boogeyman. Then we have the Muslims as boogeymen, you know, but then suddenly, you know, they're dying out, so we've got to make Russia a boogeyman again. So the everybody has to combine their history and look, this is absurd. Empires do this. The British Empire was like this. They still want to hang on. I think they still want to think that they're becoming or still an empire. But the United States has become the empire. And it's the capitalism. And I'm not going to debate capitalism one way or another. But the thing is, other countries are not allowed to deviate from the free market system that we profess around the world. And that's all these people around the world are dying because of it. And I don't care what anyone says, that is, and that's where history comes in. And it's been happening since World War One. So that's, you know, my take on that.
Yeah, you know, I think it's funny, too, talking about free market and capitalism. One of the biggest proponents of it that was an elected official was Ron Paul. And his position is leave these countries alone, let them decide for themselves what they want to do. Just focus on ourselves here. I think the world's a better place when people individually participate in their civic responsibilities, but also leave each other alone, stay out of each other's business, and let everyone decide for themselves what is best for them. We can't seem to do that here because people will believe one thing or some ideology or religious belief or whatever and think that everybody needs to follow it, and that's how we have these internal conflicts. But then you take it to a macro level and look at nation states, and we're just imposing our will on everybody here, and I don't think it's good for us, obviously. Who wants to live like this? I mean, I had friends who loosely follow the news, not as closely as I do, of course, and they're all worried about World War III breaking out over this, because, you know, what if Russia or China jumps in? I mean, that's a serious problem, and 100 years ago, we didn't have to worry about nuclear weapons and these things. Now it's something that comes up in your mind, and who wants to live with this stuff hanging over us all the time? I mean, we should be focusing on things that are in our national interest, cool things, trying to go into space. That's my personal view. If I ever ran for president, which I never will, but if I did, I would be focusing on building up these industries and trying to just make us the best country that we can be through science and technology. But we don't do this now because all the science and technology is put towards war and boosting up these companies that make money off of the wars, the military-industrial complex we were warned about. Funny enough that the overthrow of Iran happened under Eisenhower. You know, the CIA-backed overthrow of Iran happened under Eisenhower, who ended up giving that speech in his farewell address later on. But you also mentioned the media, and this is something I want to say to the truth movement. All right, I'm not going to opine on Trump. I don't get involved in that here on the show. However, I did see that when Trump came about, there was a large section of the truth movement, just like of America, that got behind him. Okay, fine. But the loudest voices out in the media backing him, his biggest cheerleaders, are these people like Sean Hannity and Glenn Beck, who were absolutely attacking the 9/11 truth movement back when Bush was president, when Obama was president. And I just see sort of this like alignment where, like, certain truthers are citing Sean Hannity when it came to the impeachment stuff that was going on, or citing Sean Hannity and Glenn Beck. I'll never cite these people, even if I happen to be saying things that are they're saying as well, because we happen to agree on a particular thing. I'm not going to turn to Sean Hannity as some voice of truth, some rebel. And I love how Fox News calls the rest of the media, the mainstream media, as if they're somehow not the mainstream media. Somehow they're the rebels out there that are telling the truth to the people. It's ridiculous. And I don't want to see us fall into this partisan divide here in the movement. I want to see us keep focused on the fact that it really isn't any different. Now, I saw when Obama became president, a large part of the anti-war movement sort of dropped off. They thought they won something, and this guy was allowed to pretty much go unchallenged on whatever bad stuff he did. I don't know. Did you have the same observation, Bob? And I mean, if so, what's your commentary?
No, I used to speak about that anywhere I would go. Obama's just as bad. It's a system. You know, we got to stop looking at Republicans and Democrats. They're, as far as I'm concerned, they're the same. The system has to be changed. A multi-party system. I don't know what it is, but the thing is, the Democrats have really shown their true colors with this, with Trump. I mean, the fact this Russiagate thing. And, you know, I used to speak against Obama. I said, he's no different. He's still a worm. You know, they give him the Nobel Peace for, Prize for Peace. That was ridiculous. That's to say, you know, I don't know what the answer is. But again, you know, like huge demonstrations. And it can't be Democrat. It can't be. There's still, I mean, you talked about Ron Paul. I heard him the other day about, you know, but, you know, he like, makes fun of socialism, that capitalism is the only way. I'm not so sure, like, if he became a president, he would be going into these same countries and overthrowing them. People have to realize that capitalism, you know, that he's talking about libertarian philosophy, is not working for people in America, not working for these people in the inner cities. And I don't know what the answer is, but the thing is, we still go to war just because these other countries just don't adopt this free market system that we have. And the free market system, it's the trickle-down effect hasn't been proven to be the proper thing to do. You know, through the 90s, they're saying, well, the trickle-down effect takes care of everyone. Well, it doesn't. So the whole system has to change. So, Obama, to me, was a piece of trash as far as I'm concerned. Every president is, because they just don't come through with anything. And the system still exists. And the system is big money. And, you know, I'll say that till the day I die. And that's, again, I don't know what you can do if you only have a Democrat or Republican. Biden, he's useless. Bernie Sanders talks socialism. I don't know exactly what he really wants out of socialism, but the thing is, how much does he talk about the anti-war movement? I never hear him speak about that. What's happening, you know, around the world? Is he going to pull troops from every place in the world, or is he? I don't know. He really doesn't have a strong foreign policy. So, it's, you know, the system still has control of, well, the candidates. He's the one I think it scares people. Biden, you know, he's going to be worse than Obama and than Trump put together. I think we'll have more wars with him than we'll have with anyone. So, I just don't trust the system at all. I think the system stinks, and it really has to be changed drastically. You know, everything is corrupted. The Supreme Court is corrupted. The president is corrupted, and Congress is corrupted. And I don't know what can be done. That's why I say it has to be, you know, it has to be. I hope a nonviolent revolution, but people really have to take charge, and that can be done. You know, it's amazing. You know, if you suddenly have 4 or 5 million people in Washington saying this system really has to be changed. And people ask, well, what should we do about it? Well, get out of the other countries of the world. Stop spending so much, the trillions of dollars that we spent on war since 2001. This is absurd. What $1 trillion could do for the poor cities of this country, for the poor people of this country, is just mind-boggling. But that discussion just never comes about because, again, the idiots that run the newspapers, and they tell the newspapers themselves that this is the only thing in print. The Hannity's, to everyone on TV. CNN's just as bad. They're not going to talk about this. CNN's joined the war wagon already. Just exactly what happened in Iraq. And you sit there and shake your head. I mean, I remember meeting friends of my wife. We had a party. That's why I don't go to parties. I don't see people. And these are really intelligent people. And they thought the Iraq war was so necessary. I looked at him. I just shook my head. You know, I just said, "You're all idiots." You know, I haven't talked to him since. We're just so brainwashed, absolutely brainwashed, and it's again because of the media. And it's and who owns the media? Well, we're talking big time money, and then they're shown what to do with what. That's what the job is. CIA. CIA does anything it wants, and that's what's running this country. And people have to realize that. And I don't know how they can rebel, but, you know, I guess the only way is to go to the cities. It happened in the 30s. Things did change in the 30s. These people were, you know, were in the streets of Washington, millions of people. you know, trying to change the system. So I don't know what the answer is, but I think that's the only answer.
Right. I think the beginning of it starts with the individual. It's just stop, turn off the radio, find trusted sources of news. You don't want to be just completely in a bubble and not knowing what's going on. But I, you know what I do? I go to the Indian news because they don't seem to have a stake in any of this. So I just get the straight facts from them of what's going on without any commentary or attacks at the other side or anything like that. It gives me a good perspective there. But there's other places I'm sure people can go to. And of course, there's nothing wrong with listening to each side of the debate. I mean, I went right to Press TV when this all started and looked at the world from the other side. And I listen to Fox News sometimes, not because I agree with them, but actually it gives you a pretty good indicator of where things are going because you can see what kind of propaganda they're pushing. And so if you get an idea of where they're trying to angle the audience towards, you can have a pretty good idea of what's going to happen or what they're going to try to make happen. So you can get a good perspective by listening to everyone, even people you don't like. But you're absolutely right, and I see this situation as not being over. I hope I'm wrong, and it's just a continuation of what we've done over the many years. I heard another radio person, and I can't even remember who it was. I happened to be walking through a room, and this was on another person's radio. This was during the missile attacks on our bases yesterday, and this person was yelling, "What about 9/11 did you miss?" He's saying this to his audience, which are people he's hoping are going to be all pro-war. "What about 9/11 did you miss?" And it's so sad because I have these great one-liners and nobody's around to hear them. And I said the explosive demolition, the nanothermite in the dust, the free fall of Building 7. That's what you missed. And that's really what it all boils down to. That's the game changer to all of this pro-war rhetoric and everything that we are seeing now. And that's why they want to stifle it as much as possible. You mentioned Bernie Sanders. You know, I have a volunteer that's going out and confronting all of these presidential candidates right now and handing them packets about the Bobby McElveen Act, handing them our information, and Bernie Sanders won't take it.
Really? Jeez.
He won't take it. We questioned him on C-SPAN. Years ago, when we had people calling Washington Journal every day and asking about Building 7, and Bernie Sanders doesn't want to deal with any of this. So I don't have any faith in any side, regardless of their ideology, whatever. I'll talk to anybody that wants to deal with this issue. These are the people that are supposed to be representing us. But see, they're not here to help. They're here to handle. It's like we're in this big elementary school. So they'll try to go with the soft approach first, but they have no problem shutting down, clamping down, and stifling things like this. But I want to bring it back to 9/11 because it really is the center of all of these things. I mean, how much, if we just had magic happen overnight, 9/11, the information came out and it was exposed overnight. I mean, do you think that would bring an end to all of this, at least for the time being?
Well, it would be, I don't think it would bring an end to it, but it's certainly a good start. And it's almost like you have to start in kindergarten. You know, like every high school, they're going to have to change their whole curriculum. You know, and again, why did 9/11 happen? Why, you know, it's just, it would take so long, and hopefully that's what happens. I mean, you know, I'm basically optimistic because it's getting so bad, and it all revolves around 9/11 because they'll always use 9/11. Well, because of 9/11, we've had to do all these things, and of course, we always have to have the demon, and the Muslims have been the demon. You know, again, the Russians were the demons. You know, the Germans were, for a short period of time, were the demons. But you always have to have that demon. Suddenly, we eliminate that demon that, hey, Muslims aren't part of this. I don't care if there's, you know, 100 Muslims involved in it. They're not part of this. Again, I recognize what the system is. And that's, it'll take a long time because there's just going to be so many idiots that just don't want to believe it. But if the press came out and said this, if you suddenly, 9/11 was an inside job. 9/11 was a false flag. Teach false flags in the high schools. And then people start saying, well, geez, what the false flag? Well, yeah, I was taught that in high school, and this is that. And, well, this is. And then suddenly, I think the rest of the world might just say, we don't need wars. I mean, it's a good time with the nuclear weapons. We get rid of the nuclear weapons. I mean, I think China and Russia, I mean, people want to demonize Russia, but I think the rest of the world is ready to say, hey, let's just trade with each other. I mean, Trump came out with that in the beginning. That's why 9/11, you mentioned that, but 9/11 family members are thinking, geez, he knows what happened on 9/11. Maybe he will put a stop to all this. Because what he had said in the beginning, let's just trade with people. That's a good idea. I mean, if everybody in the world traded, let's bring up the lives of people in the South and Central America. Let's bring up the lives of people in Asia. And that can be done. It could be easily done. The natural resources of this world, everybody could be fed. And, you know, and again, you don't have to be a bona fide socialist. You know, you don't want a socialist government where the government tells you what to do. But it's like, I read an article, well, we have an Acme up there, a food store up the street. It's a combine where everyone shares in the profits. Well, these are the things that can be, you know, developed, and they are developing around the country. So you got to look at a lot of the positive things that are happening. You know, I don't know exactly what they call it, but it's, you know, the sharing of the corporation, where workers are sharing in the profits of everything they put forth in front, you know, on a weekly basis. So these things are happening. So I don't necessarily, you don't have to call that socialism. You don't want a government all overseeing everything where, all right, this is what we're going to do. Of course, I don't want that. But the thing is, you can have capitalism and the fact that these groups can form their own companies and they benefit from this. And you don't have one person running everything. Now, a lot of people are looking at this, and the millennials are looking at this. That's why I think there's a lot of positive things. But again, 9/11 has to be a big key here, that somehow, some way it comes out that this is what the system does. They don't care about people. They care about profits, and that's the only thing that counts. And people have to get off that mindset. And I don't think it would be that difficult to do. I really don't, because there's so few oligarchs, so few billionaires in the world. You know, they can be switched aside. But the fact is that if people in government, if they brought up Bernie Sanders in and said, this is what has to be done, and we have to have a discussion about 9/11, then we, you know, that's what you call evolution. And we might be evolving into that. And the fact that, you know, Russia's jumping into these talks with Iran. You know, Russia, you know, Iran and Russia get along with each other. China jumps into this. So maybe they'll say, well, you're not going to get there. We get rid of these war hawks. We get rid of these neoconservatives and so forth and so on. And the young people of this world, you know, start demanding that, all right, we can have both. Let's take care of our poor people. Is that socialism? Well, that could be part of capitalism or group capitalism, whatever you want to call it. So I think it is happening. You know, maybe Trump's the best thing that ever happened to us. People realize how big things can possibly get. And look at their history. Well, Obama was doing the same stuff. He was killing America. He killed an American. So that's I have to keep a positive feeling, because I don't want Bobby's death to, you know, mean nothing. And, you know, he's one death. But the thing is, these people that die around the world because of starvation, because of our silly-ass wars, it's just mind-boggling, absolutely mind-boggling. And if we go to war, millions and millions of people are going to die. And I don't think anybody in the world wants that. I know for sure they don't want that. You know, just these idiots that are running the State Department, they're the only ones that want it, these neoconservatives. I mean, there's another thing. People have to look at who these neoconservatives are. Why are they pushing this so much? Well, they've been pushing it for years. So, if teachers could go out and, you know, teach this type of thing, which they haven't been able to do, they look at 9/11. Of course, 9/11 is a big key. Why would an empire do something like that? Well, again, they would look at this as what empires do. The people that died under the British Empire, the Filipinos that died at the turn of the century because of empire. It's just all around the world. So, you know, I hate to look at myself and say, oh, I lost my son. I did it. It's horrible. But then you look at all those poor people in Africa. They're, you know, in the Congo, just Congo itself. Since early 1900s, over 20 million people have died in that country because of what we call free market capitalism. You know, we bring these presidents in who are just dictators, and they want us, you know, we're going to share in their natural wealth, and that's what they do. You know what, Lumumba was assassinated, and I forget the guy's name, Sukarno took over of Congo, and he was just an absolute dictator. Well, as long as he acquiesced to what we wanted, that was okay, but then millions and millions of people die. You know, kids working at 12 years old, they cut off their hands because they didn't do a good job one day. So this kind of stuff, and people have to recognize this, and that can change. There's no one in the world that doesn't want to live in peace. There's no one in the world that doesn't want to have a good life, and there's no reason you can't have that. And, of course, 9/11 is the big key because we keep using it. Well, the Muslims are the evil people, you know. That's That's the sad part of all this. So that's, I mean, 9/11 is so important because of that. But again, you know, who has the time to really look into it? And that's the biggest problem.
That's right. And I don't think Bobby's death will be for nothing, because it's part of the spark that has lit up this big awakening. I really think 9/11 truth is the beginning of the awakening of a lot of issues for people, looking into these deeper history issues. And even though they're trying to clamp down on us on the internet, it's not going to work forever, because it's just going to go somewhere else or some other platform on the internet. And when I say internet, I should clarify, I'm talking about YouTube. But it's going to go to some other platform, and this will continue to grow and spread. It's normal that the next generation that wasn't alive when this took place will be sick of this by the time they come into their own and inherit this world. And we may not see it. Just like Martin Luther King said during a speech talking about civil rights issues, he said, "I may not get there with you." All right, so, you know, if me and Bob may not get there with you, but I think there will come an end to this. I also have this belief, and yeah, I don't know if there's a term for it in talking about history, maybe I'm inventing it, that when you have an empire, well, first of all, empires end eventually. They always do throughout history. They always go too far in some respect and end up getting it in the end. They end up crumbling, and then something else ends up taking their place. But this constant meddling in everybody's business, this constant lying, you know, creating events and then lying about them in order to justify attacking another country, I just have this feeling it's going to come back on them in the end in some form that we can't see right now, and they're just going to overplay their hand, and they'll end up hurting themselves, the people who are doing this, in the end, and something better will come out of it. And then we'll have spent so much time talking about the science of the building it's collapsing that most people will have this in their heads and look back at that day and acknowledge what really happened. But not everyone shares my belief on this. Bob, you know, what do you think about those sentiments? Do you think this can just continue forever on its own?
No, I agree with you 100%. And specifically, again, but you just look at it, history. And this empire is dying out. There is no question about it. And that's a good sign. I just hope we don't take the rest of the world down with us. That's the only bad thing about this. And I really do believe the rest of the world is looking for something that is different. And, you know, I don't know exactly what it is, but it has to be peace. And, of course, that's what peace movements are all about. There's no one in Zaire wants war. There's no one in Brazil that wants war, as far as the common people are concerned. And it all comes from the empire wanting everything. And that's what, you know, I think it's, you know, it's coming to an end. It really is. But, you know, of course, my greatest fear is that suddenly we're going to have a world war, and then no one's going to be around to talk about it. But this is a pivotal point, I think. And I think the rest of the world is looking at the wealth of this world. It's just they control everything, and there's no reason that that kind of wealth should be with anyone. And, you know, of course, we've talked about communism, we've talked about socialism, we've talked about capitalism. There's no reason in the world that you can just have a mixture of everything. You know, that's the decision of a country. But the thing is, everyone has to realize that the people of the world has to be taken care of, that people like me, and this compound that millions of times around the world in the last 100 years that have died for no reason at all. And that's what they have to realize. And why are they dying? It's for the almighty buck. And that's all it is. And, of course, as far as our empire, the United States, and, of course, there's other people part of that empire, but it's wealth of the world. That they don't want to give up that power. It's all about power. And, you know, the civil rights movement's all about that. But then, you know, people have to, in the black movement, and the, you know, as far as race is concerned, it's almost as bad as it always has been. But you have the rich athletes. They have to stand up. Everybody has to stand up and say, this is absurd. And the only way to make a statement like that is, you know, geez, you can just take a trip to Washington. And, you know, that's the only way it can happen is we just have to, because there's no communication between people because the press won't do it. The TV won't do it. So you have to, you know, you have to talk about millions of people saying, all right, we're going to solve this problem. We're going to go to right to Congress. And we're not leaving until it's, you know, again, I keep thinking back in the early 30s, they did this. they marched on Congress. It forced Roosevelt to take a real strong stand. But I think it's, in that sense, I'm optimistic because I know the youth of the world is, I don't know, it's just, it's out there to find out. And I, again, I mentioned my son. He doesn't have the time, but the thing is, he's concerned about all these things. And I trust the youth people, the young people of the world, And it has to be a world movement. And if we can get through this, because, I think we've declined so much. The people running this country are just so backward. And it's just that, it's like the power of a Graham. He's just a punk. He's a punk. A lot of Trump's a punk. And people have to realize that suddenly they have power. And then the most powerful thing these idiots can do is have a war, and then suddenly they feel so powerful. And that has to be stopped. So I don't know. I sometimes I'm very optimistic. I just think the world is changing.
Yeah, I think that bad people end up shooting themselves in the foot in the end. They always do. I've always seen that in my personal life. Now, nations and worlds obviously take a little bit longer to manifest. But I think that, I deal with some young people for college outreach. They're always these very optimistic and excited and energetic people. We get older, we get a little bit more tired, but there's always new generations coming in, and all that information that was shared falls onto the next generation, and then it just becomes commonly associated fact. So, Bob, it's awesome to talk to you, and I wish we could continue it, but they only give me an hour, so we're going to have to wrap it up. I want to thank you so much for coming on today. I know it was kind of short notice while all this was going on, and thank you so much for coming on 9/11 Freefall.
Hey, Andy, thank you for having me, all right?
All right, man.
Good talk to you, pal.
This program is on every Thursday night on No Lies Radio and every other Thursday night on BBS Radio at 10 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Pacific. You can also keep track of the archives by going to 911freefall.com. This is Andy Steele saying have a great week. Good luck.